is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine conflict. I welcome my colleague Katrina Vandenhove, the editorial director and publisher of The Nation magazine, to reflect on a new piece at Foreign Affairs, highly recommended, Don't Fear Putin's Demise, by the extremely famous, world-scale famous chess master Garry Kasparov and his colleague Mikhail Khodorkovsky, who, before he was persecuted by Vladimir Putin and Dmitry Medvedev, led the privatization of the Russian energy fields, now back in the hands of the Kremlin. But these two men writing together are looking to the future, a utopian future. You will remember from the 19th century, Russians are very good at imagining a future that is anywhere but here. So here is the remark I asked Katrina to reflect upon. Putin's military defeat would help catalyze a political transformation in Russia, making it possible for those seeking a brighter future to dismantle the old regime and forge a new political reality. Katrina, a very good evening to you. You've traveled widely. You have many colleagues who are Russians or Russian experts. Do you measure that it is possible, this utopia, a brighter future by dismantling the Kremlin's apparatus? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. I think Mr. Khodorkovsky and Mr. Kasparov do not understand the country they lived in. One wishes a stable democracy, freedom of speech, participation. But it's pretty clear at this point that if Putin is swept aside, and if, you know, the idea that he's alone in his thinking about Ukraine or NATO, these are views that are run across the political spectrum at this moment, a time of war. Of course, there are oppositionists. Many have left the country. Of course, there are people who seek democracy. But it's very hard in a time of war, of conflict, to achieve the goals that they talk about. In addition, there's a kind of lack of concern for people. It's as if this will be rammed down people's throats and they will know that Khodorkovsky and Kasparov know what's best for them. Gorbachev brought the Soviet Union closer to a point of democracy than at any time in 1,000 years. The looting of the country under Mr. Khodorkovsky and Yeltsin, Boris Yeltsin, set back the path of democracy. And we now have Putin, who, when he came to power, his first act was immunity for Yeltsin's family. His second was to stand in a country which had collapsed twice, 1917 and 1991, and repair it. Now, how he did that and what's happened and the abuses and the direction is to be debated. But Khodorkovsky and Kasparov seem to forget that Putin was the first Western leader to reach out to George W. Bush after 9/11, and that there was a strong westernizing cohort, which Putin was more part of than not. But the rise of extremist, nationalist, right-wing voices, military voices in Russia today under Putin would assure that for a short time, certainly, you're not going to see what they sketch out in foreign affairs.
Yeah, how we got here, that's a fascination. And Katrina, we don't have time enough left in our lives to imagine all of that. But one detail bothers me, because you understand, I'm from the outside. I have a smattering of the language. And with years of practice talking to Professor Cohen, I have some understanding of the ironies. And one of the ironies is the 1996 election.
Yes.
One of the profound catastrophes of American foreign policy. It was fixed. Do we debate that anymore? Is that still?
We don't. I recommend to your listeners Moscow Times in 96, 97, under the leadership of Matt Bivens, a very good journalist, did an investigative piece that in essence confirmed that the election was fixed, and fixed with U.S. dollars, fixed really most corruptly with loans for shares, which meant that these oligarchs we now see traipsing around the world with their yachts, et cetera, were able to buy, you know, the minerals, the commanding heights of the Russian economy at bargain basement prices in order to give support to Yeltsin, the trade-off.
And create resentment in the population that they were once again being left outside of the spoils.
That's right. I mean, I do think we're at a place now, John, where the prolonged bloody stalemate and the kind of bargaining over whether Leopard missiles or Abrams tanks will go. Yes, much will be decided on the battlefield. There seems to be momentum for another round on the battlefield. But the prolonged bloody stalemate, it's not only harming U.S. security, harming European security, which I would argue has been hit harder by sanctions and energy problems than Russia. And it's possible that you could see a U.S./NATO versus Russia war, which is extraordinarily dangerous, and could lead to nuclear usage, which the head of the State Duma, Vyacheslav Volodin, spoke of yesterday. Now, these can be viewed as threats and that we must be vigilant. But at the same time, I think there's more and more urgency to come to, and you've probably talked to Anatol Levin about this, but to a ceasefire. It may not be a peace settlement because the sides are not there, but a ceasefire may be the best option. And there are precedents. Anatol speaks very clearly about Kashmir, which is not fully stable, or Cyprus, which is more stable. So I think these need to be considered because it's the escalation, and I'll end here, John. The escalation leads to a question, which is, what is the purpose of the war now? Is it about sovereignty and freedom for Ukraine? Is it about, as Kasparov and Khodorkovsky speak of, regime change in Russia? So I think it's very important to clarify, and much of that has to come from Washington. What's the goal here?
Back to the writers of this essay at Foreign Affairs, which I highly recommend. It has a lot of moving parts about what the government would look like. Utopian government, I understand, but still you need to start somewhere, as the U.S. did with Germany and Japan and other nations after defeats. If Mr. Putin is defeated, does it look like afterwards? Does the diaspora have an opinion? These two men are in the diaspora, but it's much larger than that. And now it's spread over many countries throughout Eurasia.
But by what right does Khodorkovsky, they seem to have this group set up in exile, by what right do Khodorkovsky and Kasparov have to decide the future of Russia? They're not in Russia. I also think any stable outcome, and you can argue that a bad peace leads to a bad end, but to be inside Russia, to work with Russians, to listen to Russians. Navalny, by the way, is an interesting figure who might lead a democratic government, but on the other hand, he supports annexation of Crimea. He has what is called Naval Nationalism, his own specific ideas of nationalism. I don't know who they're thinking of, Kasparov and Khodorkovsky, and they're not the setup of Ukraine as a victory for democracy worldwide. I wish. I think it's important that a sovereign nation be free, but on all kinds of indicators now, John, you know this, in Ukraine, there's a banning of use of language, Russian, in education and other areas. This is not the democracy that they're promising. So I just, I think there's a fantasy there, which they have a right to propagate, but it's complicated. And Gorbachev did again set up a people's deputies parliament. People stopped working for hours. I remember the productivity level plummeted. People were watching the people's deputy, the Congress of People's Deputies with Sakharov and others. But that takes work. You don't just pop in from your private jet to declare how Russia will look.
Katrina Vandenhovel is the editorial director and publisher of The Nation magazine. She also writes a very helpful column in The Washington Post and has traveled many years in Russia before Gorbachev, during Gorbachev, after Gorbachev. Now that travel is extremely dubious, risky, and the question is, for the balance of the 21st century, do any of us hope to return to Russia as it was? I'm John Vandenhovel.